Welcome to Defining Endurance, a podcast focused on providing actionable insights for endurance athletes. Whether you're an athlete just getting started in endurance sports or a veteran looking to gain an edge, the Defining Endurance podcast is here to ask curious questions with athletes and fitness professionals. And most importantly, dive deep on current training topics so you can become the best version of yourself. Let us wait no longer. Let's dive into this week's episode. All right, guys, welcome back or welcome to the Defining Endurance podcast. I'm your host, Coach Andrew Simmons from Lifelong Endurance. And today we're going for a long run, or I should say for the long run. My guest today, Mr. John Levitt. John, thanks for jumping on with me.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is fun. We're doing a little podcast swap, having a little fun being on each other's shows and just getting a chance to, I think, almost get to know each other. We were actually supposed to go for a run today, but chaos and life, I think, all came together.
That is true. Yes. So we did over on my podcast, episode 208 together. A little less chaotic, but we got it done. And then Wednesday was, we didn't have any weather here in Boulder, but we still had chaos.
Yeah. So, and I think that actually is a great segue, because I think, you know, as we talked about, you know, just kind of getting here and trying to get all of our mutual technologies to work, you know, when I think about it, I was doing a little research on you, and I think chaos might be part of what got you in. You talk a lot about your why, and I think for the long run is a big part of that is helping understand the why behind a lot of athletes that you interview. And I think when I look at that, when I wanted to have you tell or retell your TNF story, your experience therein, and how you got into, you know, running, but also into the podcast. So let's go all the way back, and maybe we can conclude with the TNF side of things. But where did running really come into your life first?
Yeah, we'll talk about the DNF at TNF later. But so I was I grew up in Boston, one town over from where the Boston Marathon would run through. And so the first year that I was home after college was 2013. And I was watching from Wellesley because I was living at home and it was easier to go to Wellesley than it was to go downtown. I was just feeling particularly lazy that day. I was originally planning to go to the finish line with some friends, but I went to Wellesley. We all went to Wellesley instead. And so I'm standing there in Wellesley, roughly the halfway point, what I later learned was basically the scream tunnel. And I was like, look at all these people of different shapes and sizes and ages. And I was a cocky 22-year-old. And I said, if they can do it, so can I. And I was right. but that was what got me thinking about it. And then the bombing happened. A couple hours later, I was in a Foot Locker store at the Natick Mall or something like that. And the next day, I just felt compelled to run. I wasn't a runner. I would run twice a week up to like 6 miles, but I was doing like 10 miles a week, roughly, across two runs, maybe three runs, but like 10 to 12 miles a week. And I drove to the top of Heartbreak Hill. I didn't know that's what it was at the time. And I ran into Boston. And I made it to the turn at Hereford, where I ran into a SWAT team and a guy with a massive machine gun who said, "Boy, you can't be here." And I said, "Okay." And I turned around and ran home. And that was my first half marathon. And it was also my first stress fracture, and the euphoria of like seeing the city in such a chaotic time while also exploring my city by foot, and exploring what the road that 30,000 plus people had run down just the day prior, literally the day prior. And just being so raw, like I can't go another step. When I hit 10 miles, I was like, ooh, wouldn't it be cool if I ran a marathon today? And then like the 11th mile hit and I was like, oh, I better get back to my car before I like keel over and die. Because I had never crossed the 10 mile threshold, let alone half marathon. And I was doing it in the Five Fingers toe shoes. And yeah, first stress fracture, really. I went couch to half marathon to couch, but it hit in a way that nothing ever had. Like I was decent at sports growing up, but never great. And what I learned with running initially was like, you don't have to have any skills besides consistency. Like consistency is the only skill that matters, or the skill that matters most in running. And I went from a kid that kind of sucked at hockey and was above average at baseball in a town with a lot of above average athletes to, wow, if I like put a little effort into this, I can see some serious results. And like when I started running, so that first half marathon was exactly 2 hours. And then my first official half marathon was 1 year later, and I ran 1:35. So with like very minimal training, I cut 25 minutes off in the half. And that was like a 10 month. So like the minutes just shed away. And I was like, this is really cool that like with a little effort and a lot of consistency, cool stuff can happen. Fast forward 10 years almost, which is insane to think about, 9 years.
Right.
And like, yeah, we're at 35 minutes off of that first half. And I've done things that the 2013 version of me would not have recognized or thought possible.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And I don't, you know, want to spend this whole podcast, comparing and contrasting. But I mean, that was it for me at the same time. Like mine was 2009. I did my first marathon and I did a half earlier that year just to like see what was possible. But like from 3:45, my first marathon to, you know, 10 years later in 2019, I'd run 2:39. Right. And so like an hour and 6 minutes, I'm like, that's, I think, what gets a lot of people into it is like, it's addicting. It's a healthy addiction, right? Like it's this kind of thing where you're like, oh, what is possible? What is this next? What's that next layer? And I think that's what you experienced that day in Boston. It's this, I think, euphoria that we all chase. And I think about this when I have an athlete that I coach that maybe is doing their first marathon or their first half marathon. Like, we talk about like you only get one first time, and like it sounds so silly to say this, but you only get one first time at the half, the full, and all those different things from the distances. But it's I don't know that feeling. I don't know about you, but like I've finished many a marathon and it's super emotional. Like I'm crying at the end of it, not because like I've overcome some massive thing, but I just feel emotional and you feel very proud. I remember finishing my hometown marathon for the first time. And I'm like, this is my city. Like you feel such an ownership for your city when you start to run around it and you're like, you find new things and explore. And it's such a fun way to do it by foot.
Totally. Yeah. The first time I crossed that marathon finish line, I was like, holy shit, the 2000 miles that it took to get here made it all worth it. And it really is that, right? Like, it took shifting from thinking about like the race is the test to thinking about the race is the celebration of getting there. And when I was able to finally frame it that way, I stopped sucking at marathons. And it's still a work in progress, but yeah, for me it was like, what a cool way to experience a city or a day or these new distances. Even like I ran a 50K and I ran rim to rim to rim. And like the first time you do something epic. It's like my body did that. Like standing at the south rim, looking at the north rim, and knowing I ran there and then ran back. You cannot compare that to any feeling unless you do it again. But the first time is like unforgettable.
Well, you're just, you know, I think what's beautiful about that is you're constantly broaching into the unknown, right? That first time you train for a marathon, it's every weekend is the farthest you've run yet, right? That 17 right. mile run, that eight, and you're like, you're constantly, you know, pushing into this new and kind of landscape that it almost like I can do 20, right? But that 20 miler has a certain amount of weight. And I think one of the things is that as you grow as a runner, you're like, oh, I got to do a 20 miler this weekend. And at some point that 20 miler was like the scariest thing. Like you thought about that on, you know, Sunday after doing Saturday's 19, you were thinking about 20 already. And there's that buildup that goes with that, but also those like epic journeys into the unknown. And I think about that, like how I coach that and the mindset behind it. And I think that's where I want to take this, but I want to make sure we do share the TNF story at the intro to the podcast here, because I think one of the things I'd really like to talk about you is because you've spent a lot of time with your podcast talking to athletes at every single level. I think one of the things I love about listening to your podcast, because it has been a great addition to my own repertoire of listening, is that it's not just pros. And it's not just the pros that are hot on the day. You're talking to all ranges and paces and abilities of people, and they all have something to offer. And I think I want to dive into something that I think you'll be uniquely good at, is sharing the ideas behind mindset and what you've learned from some other people. But before we get there, you list on the page, and what I love is that we're both supported through Anchor. And with that, you share, this is my why. And I think why is such an important piece that we'll get to. But if you'll share not the origin story, because Boston is that, but your, DNF at TNF.
So the DNF at TNF was actually a year after that photo. But that photo was taken at the end of my first 50K. So I went over 3 at TNF 50K. The first year I didn't train enough to line up for a 50K, so I did the relay. The second year, 2018, was the year of the fires, so the race was canceled. And the third year, I sprained my ankle at mile 14 and I could barely walk, and I DNF'd at 18 and a half and got driven all over the Golden Gate Bridge by a random person who was my guardian angel on the day. But 2018, the race was canceled. I had flown out from Boston, and basically on Wednesday, my friend Tristan was like, hey, if you still want to come out, I'll show you guys my favorite trails in Tahoe and we'll do our own thing. I tweeted a couple of times and posted on Instagram a couple of times, and fast forward another day and all of the North Face athletes were saying that they were going out to Tahoe to run a 50K and raise money for wildlife or wildfire relief. Meanwhile, this escalated quickly and we put up a Facebook fundraiser. All of a sudden we had like $1,000. North Face jumps in. They're like, we'll match whatever you raise. Okay, fast forward another few hours and we're at $5,000. I get another note from North Face. Just want to let you know, we'll match anything. So I'm like, okay, what's happening here? Meanwhile, like Dylan Bowman, Hillary Allen, Stephanie Howe, all these incredible trail athletes, Corinne Malcolm, all these incredible athletes, EO Wang, they're all committing to going to Tahoe because either they're already in the Bay Area or they're like, fuck it, I love trail running and I love the community. I want to be out there and have a really awesome long run. So Thursday or Friday, we get out to Tahoe and go for some shakeouts and plan to do this on Saturday. So my last run was like 3 miles at 6,000 feet elevation. I live in Boston, or I lived in Boston at the time. And so I'm like going from sea level to a route that takes us almost to 9,000 feet with 6,000 feet of climbing. And I ran it with a group. So Saturday morning, we have like 50 people in the parking lot. There's a dude making coffee out of like 20-gallon containers. And I'm like, holy crap, this is the epitome of the trail community. And I had spent so much mind share thinking about putting this all on that I forgot that I was running a 50K that day. Which made it really easy. So I show up to the parking lot, and when I get into the parking lot at like 8 a.m. or whatever on that Saturday morning, I'm like, at some point in the next 30 minutes, I'm going to go start running a 50K. Whoa. And I did, and we did. And so I start running with my friend, Jenny, who I had been training with in Boston. She was going to run her first marathon at North Face, and we had figured that her marathon and my 50K times would match up in a way that would put us both at our last 2 or 3 miles when the course joined up. And like, what are the odds we finish her first marathon together, like across the Golden Gate Bridge into Crissy Field? And so we thought that on that day, we might share like 2 miles. Well, anyway, I run the whole marathon with her and it was incredible. And she's one of my best friends. And there were two others that we ran with. And so we ran 25 miles together. And what was cool about that was not all of us were experiencing the highs or the lows at the same time. So I hit my lows at 18 to 21, had stomach issues and needed more fuel and blah, blah, blah. And then somebody else hit, you know, the wall at 23. We get to the parking lot at 25, and I say congrats to my friend Jenny and bye to my friend Katie. As they finished, they, you know, did parking lot loops to hit 26.2, just to make sure it was Strava official. And then my buddy Brian and I keep going, and we ran through the parking lot, and you know, everyone's cheering, and then we start going up. We're hitting two more summits. One's Mount Judah, and I forget the other name. But anyway, it's like 8,600 feet. You're overlooking Donner Lake, and it's just gorgeous. Anyway, on the climb, we're at like mile 27. I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, literally every step is something I've never done before. Every single step is my new distance PR. How cool is that? Brian looks over to me as we're on like a little flowy dip. And he's like, John, I've got a problem. I'm like, what's your problem? He's like, I can't stop smiling. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, like me too. This is insane. And so we keep climbing. We get to like mile 29. We're overlooking Donner Lake, I'm pretty sure is what it is. And we're just like, we've been running along the ridge for a mile. And it's the most stunning view I've ever seen, because it took me 6 hours, 6.5 hours to get there. And there's a photo of me just like arms up, just like full of stoke, also just like completely trashed. And this is a feeling I'll remember forever. And he goes, all right, should we get back to the parking lot and celebrate? And so we flowed downhill for the next 2 miles. And so that photo that marks my why is the epitome of why I do it, right? Community. Community. That's it. Nobody there was competing. Nobody there was there to win. We ended up raising $10,000 that North Face matched. So we made a $20,000 donation, which was brutal for the IRS sake. I literally got audited like 3 weeks ago, and this was like a giant pain in the ass because I didn't record it appropriately. It was just a payment from Facebook. Anyway, the epitome of why we do it, right? You had 50 strangers in a parking lot, all there to support each other, to support the community. And we made a $20,000 donation, which in the grand scheme of things is tiny and small potatoes, but it was helpful to those who received it, I would like to think. And it made a statement that the trail running community cares about the community that we get to play in, right? Shalane Flanagan is a mentor and proud even to say friend of mine, and she talks about playing running. She gets to play runner. And that day we got to play runner for 7 hours and 7 minutes. And it was incredible. And I could not wipe that smile off my face. And that is why I do it.
Yeah. No, that's a phenomenal story. I listened, you know, just recently to Shalane's episode on finding mastery. And I love that idea because as someone that coaches a lot of youth people, it shouldn't be about this competition thing and always about like, how do we face down our competition? But more so it's like, how do we enjoy the process along the way? And I think, right, like I feel that my job is more so not to create the next level of Olympians, but more so to like give kids and athletes and people this opportunity to really enjoy the process of going after something, just like what you've explained, where it's about the hunt, right? More so than like what you get at the end. Cause in this sense, there was no medal. There's nothing, you don't even have like a piece of tree bark that says I finished thing, right? And I think so often we have these metal racks and like, you can even look behind me, like I got some of my bibs of like races I finished. And those are like these beautiful things that you have that they serve as like, oh, I can think of like up there, there's Bill Rogers' signature, right? Like, and like, that's something that means something to me because I got to meet that guy and he's a fixture in the sport. But at the same time, like my greatest memories and the things that I've enjoyed the most, I don't have a single bib from, I don't have a medal to commemorate. I don't have a t-shirt that says 2019, whatever, whatever. It was about going and doing. I took two of my high school kids and in your backyard, the Skyline Traverse. I took two of my older high school boys. They're pretty talented kids. And one of my best buddies and an athlete that I coached, and he was leading us through it. And it was 17 miles, 5,500 feet of climbing or whatever. And I thought, I've got this. Like, I was totally like thinking in my head, like, we're going to be great. These high school kids were just like tearing our legs off. And I'm like, maybe I don't have this quite the way I thought that I had this, but it's the memories of like what you said, that community, because I have that memory and I didn't raise any money doing so. I mean, that's such a great secondary piece, but you really talked about, you know, that it's in the journey, right? And doing it with happiness. And I love what your friend said there, because it reminds me of all those times that I just looked over at somebody and there wasn't words exchanged. It was just like, is this really fucking cool? Yes, this is really fucking cool.
That's
right.
That's
like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Like, this is so cool.
That's the whole point, because that's the part that we can control. You can't control the finishing times. You can't control if you feel good at, you know, mile 24 of a marathon. And if you do, you probably aren't running fast enough. But it's the, like, we had professional athletes crewing us. Devin Yanko sacrificed her entire morning to drive her car around so that we would have food. And so that when we got lost at mile 20, she could make fun of us and drive us back to where we needed to go. And so it was like running 10K to 10K to Devin's car, where we would like joke around and whatever. And then she would tell us to get lost, literally. We did. Maybe she shouldn't have said it like that. Anyway, but like what I've learned through the podcast, so I've had 210 conversations now, and 50 to 75% of them are with professional athletes. And the reason that I focus on professional athletes while also going with amateur athletes is because A, I want to grow the podcast so that more people can hear the lessons, but the amateurs also have so many life stories and lessons to share. But I like the pros because there's some inherent trust in what they're saying, right? If I talk to Gwen Jorgensen, who won an Olympic gold medal, she had to have done some things right along the way. You can't just like strike the genetics lottery and like dance your way to the Olympics. You have to strike the win the genetics lottery and also do all these other amazing things. We can't change our genetics, but we can change how we, what we do with what we have. And so what I've learned from all these incredible people is that if you control your definition of success, or if you define success in a controllable way, you're a winner, and you'll always be a winner, even when you're losing. And for me, that's been the greatest shift. And how I've been able to, like, I might not race more than once or twice this year. I don't even need to race. I'm signed up for a race in Tahoe because it's fun. And I am considering CIM because the course is just like insanely fast and I want to run insanely fast. But I used to like really focus on racing and really focus on like, oh, I got to break three. And it wasn't until I removed the like need to do it that I did it. And that was a shocking twist that I wasn't expecting, but I learned. But now if you ask me what I'm training for, actually somebody asked me recently while we were running together, and I said life. And he was like, oh my God, me too. Like nobody ever says that. And so here's Foon. You probably met him actually.
Oh, yeah. We're big buddies actually.
Yeah. In Austin. And so Foon has traveled the world with some of the most elite athletes, and he's worked with every single team imaginable and has coached, you know, all these people. And so he's seen a thing or two as well. And he's an incredible photographer as well. And so we were chatting on a run, actually the day of the Austin Marathon, and we were just like, I just want to be fit enough to do fun stuff and have it feel good. And like, I'm thinking like, I have a 27-mile loop I want to do this summer, and the 15-mile High Lonesome loop, and like all these things that are just so fun. And I want to feel good having fun. And so like, for example, today I ran 7x2-minute hills, and it was at like 15% grade or 12% grade. So like brutal, like basically up to Chautauqua. I captioned my run on Strava with this. I said, if you don't know your why, run hill reps at altitude, because you'll either figure it out or you'll quit really quickly, because it's not fun. Like doing that is not fun. It's not comfortable. It's not enjoyable. And if you do it right, you want to puke. And if you do it wrong, you will puke. And so I was thinking while I was doing it, I was like, okay, this isn't fun, but it's bringing me joy. And that's important. It's necessary, because if I want to go run these big mountains in the summer, I need a pretty big aerobic base, but also some climbing legs. And so workouts like these set the foundation for the ability to do these epic adventures. And those epic adventures feel awful if you don't have a base. Many people still do those epic adventures and feel awful, but and they're interested in completion. I'm interested in feeling good and like having fun, also having some highs and lows during, but it's not possible without these like glue workouts that hold it all together.
Yeah. You know, I was sitting here and I wrote the note, like, it's about having the ability to kind of do whatever, whenever, like if that spur of the moment, someone calls you up and say, hey, you want to go do this loop at like 6 a.m. tomorrow? And you're like,
when it comes to your health and longevity, you hold nothing back. You understand what it means to push harder, reach farther, and go the extra mile. This relentless drive runs in your blood. That's why Inside Tracker provides you with a personalized plan to build strength, speed recovery, and optimize your health for the long haul. Created by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometrics, Inside Tracker analyzes your blood, DNA, and fitness tracking data to identify where you're optimized and where you're not. You'll get a daily action plan with personalized guidance on the right exercise, nutrition, and supplementation for your body. And when you connect Inside Tracker with your Fitbit or Garmin, you'll unlock real-time recovery pro tips after you complete your workout. It's like having your own personalized trainer and nutritionist in your pocket. For a limited time, you can get 20% off the entire Inside Tracker store. Just go to insidetracker.com/defining endurance. That's insidetracker.com/defining endurance.
Like, oh, like I think sometimes we can get really caught up in like, oh, I'm supposed to have a workout tomorrow. It's like, is this a fun thing that's going to be kind of hard? Yeah.
Like, that's literally that's the goal. So CIM last year, I was signed up for it. My goal was to run to break 250. I ran Boston and I was like, absolutely not running CIM. No way. But my girlfriend was running it. So I was still planning to go out there. And I did. And like Tuesday, Wednesday of the race, I was like, maybe I'll pick up my bib. Like I should probably look into like signing up for a bus and this kind of stuff. And I told her, I was like, I'll run the half with you and then see how I feel. And then I found out I had friends that would be at 15. So I was like, okay, and then maybe I'll go to 15. And so she was like, okay, if you're at 15, why not just go to 20? And if you're at 20, why not just finish? And I was like, Kate, we'll see. And so I woke up that morning, put a bib on, and hit the start line, not knowing if I'd run a marathon that day. And I did. And that's the shit that I want to be able to do at any time. Like, we joked about Bromka, you know, signing up the day before the Austin Marathon and running a 2:41. When he told me he was going to do that, I was just I had so much respect for him, because you can't just do that. You can't just hop into a marathon without having a substantial base and having done the work. So when he did that, I was like, wow, that's my goal. My goal is to have this type of fitness. And then I was like, wait a minute, I did that five weeks ago or whatever.
Right.
And, it's such a good feeling though, to just be able to say yes to adventure. My goal last summer, if you ask me, my goal was to say yes to anything. Like if you asked me if I wanted to go run this big thing on a Tuesday, I'd skip my Wednesday workout, run easy for the week, and go off and blast a, you know, 6-hour day. And I did that a few times and it was so fulfilling. And I used to be so rigid with training. I work with a coach. I have a training plan. I rarely miss a workout, but when I miss a workout, it's for a reason. It's not because I didn't want to do it. It's because we're moving things around with life or moving things around to accommodate, you know, a bigger run or something like that. But it's so cool when you can get to a place where the answer to adventure is just always yes.
Totally. And I think one of the things you hit on there is something that like I have struggled to get my arms around or even like the minds of my athletes around. And that's the idea of like this taking the pressure off of a moment, right? You talked about you're just going to go to the start line and see what happened that day. Right. And so the expectation there is literally zero. If you get to the half marathon mark, great. That is the minimum expectation of the day. And if you finish the marathon, cool. But what happens is what happens, and you're experiencing it as it happens. And so often when I work with some adults or even some of my youth, and this is more so in the youth side of things, is that they're like, I have to show up to this track race and I have to PR. And if I don't, it's been an unsuccessful outing. And they let it say something about themselves, right? They say, oh, I'm not as good. I've lost fitness. Things are going in the wrong direction. And it's this very black and white view of training. It's either good or it's bad. And it doesn't have this depth of color where when they have their best races, they've either resigned so much to like, I don't care, right? That's huge amounts of apathy. And they show up and they're like, I don't care. And then I have this amazing race. But the reality is that I don't think it's always apathy. I think more so it is that they took the expectation off of the moment. Right. And that moment no longer has to be this great, big, grand thing. And that when they just took a methodical approach and just said, hey, I'm going to see what happens at mile one, then mile two, and then mile three, if you know, I'm going to finish this thing, it might just turn out really cool, but I'm not going to hold myself to any expectations. And it's almost once they let themselves take a step back and not have it be, if I don't PR, it's not a good day. It just rockets for them, right? They like, it's like they unlock something and they realize that it's about the pursuit and that they can be in the moment. And I think that's so much of what you talk about here. And I think one of the biggest lessons I would say that you've learned is that you have to really enjoy and be engaged in the process. And when I say enjoy, I don't mean, you know, 5x2 minute uphills. I mean, where can it take you, right? Where can this moment of, you know, that the 5x2 minutes are part of the like gateway to get to being able to go overlook, you know, an amazing vista, and be able to have the fitness to enjoy that moment there, that you actually get to take the pressure off and say, I'm fit enough to handle whatever comes in front of me.
Totally. Something you were saying before reminds me of an episode I did with Scott Faubel. It was episode 76 of my podcast where he was talking about this, like, I guess the way you were saying it was the need to perform. And he said, he's like, okay, if I don't do well, is my girlfriend still going to love me? Yes. Okay, then, like, what's the point? Like, what are you so stuck on? Or why is it so required that you do well? And this is coming from a professional athlete who is paid to compete. Whereas I think if amateurs in particular are not having fun with it, like, none of us are getting paid to do it. And we don't have to do it. And so, honestly, I think one of the biggest blessing in disguises is like a serious injury. I wouldn't wish that on anyone, or myself, but it really helps. Because when you can't even run for 10 minutes and that's all you want to do, the next time you like really don't want to run, you think about that moment when you were sitting because you had a bilateral stress reaction from training a lot and doing really well the year prior. And now you can't run for 6 weeks. What are you going to think about? And then on those first runs back, you've never enjoyed it more. And so when you can shift from like, this is fully about joy versus everything I do is a test, I think that's where the magic happens.
I love, I'm going to make sure we quote in our media after this, John's best advice, get injured.
I mean, honestly, like,
it's such a good thing because it's a perspective. Now you have a point in,
you can't teach it.
You can't teach that loss of like, oh, this is something that I've had every day. And like, it's almost like those best injuries come. I've had a stress fracture in my left foot. I've fractured my ankle. I've had like, you know, muscular issues and things like that. And every time I come back, I'm like, I just ran 10 miles. Like I'm like, it's that feeling of just, okay, I am just grateful to be back in the game. And that's like, for me, like Austin was totally that race for me. Like, I know we didn't really know each other in that moment, but like that was 2.5 years in the making of like trying to get my fitness back and getting injured and then like stress and life and all of that just like slapping me around until finally I told myself, go back to zero, start back at square one and allow yourself to go out and just run 3 miles every single day. And then the next week go try and do 4 and just really slowly build yourself back up and allow yourself to have regressed, right? Like I think so much time is spent like, my God, if I show up to another race and I don't run what I ran before, then why even show up, right? I have had athletes literally text me and say like, I don't want to show up to another start line until I know that I'm gonna run faster. And it's like,
that's so boring. If it's predictable, so so I didn't know you that well in Austin, but I could tell based on like the way that you were buzzing post race that like there was something special about that day. And it's so cool when that all comes together, particularly after a long layoff or after a long period of like not achieving what you want to achieve. And then to get back to that place where like 8 to 10 miles is an easy run. And yeah. you just like go out and, you know, you look, you blink and an hour has passed and you've run X amount of miles. And that's a special place to be. And mm-hmm. gratitude is such a powerful component. There's a lot of research that suggests mindset and happiness actually influences your ability to recover and adapt. And so when you can approach things with joy and gratitude and appreciation, like you can do so much more because the potential is there. And
right.
like your mindset is not, wow, I have to smash my workout today, otherwise my life is a failure. Or, you know, my coach is going to think I'm not trying hard enough or whatever. Like flip that and be like, wow, I'm proud that I got after it today. And I'm proud right. that I made an effort. And I'm proud that I put my foot in front of the other and executed. And that's all that matters. If you do that enough times, you will improve. And if you don't, you should do an inside tracker test and figure out why.
Soft plug. But I mean, you talk about something that is such a common thing in our household. Like both my wife and I, like running two businesses and trying to like balance that, plus all the things that we do inside of it as coaches, and also trying to have our own athletic pursuits. Like oftentimes in our house, we'll finish a workout or a run 8, 9, almost 10 o'clock at night. Not always ideal, but I think one of the things that really, I think makes our relationship really strong is like, whenever one of us finishes a workout that late, like we say to each other, like, I'm proud of you for going after it and doing that today, because it's kind of this unspoken language that we have with each other. It's like, that's hard. Like, it's really hard that like it's 8 o'clock and you finished a whole day of work and you've been up since 6 and you may have pushed yourself off the plate of priority, which isn't always the greatest thing to do, but sometimes there's no other option. You're going to go get your run in at 8, 9, 10 o'clock. And to have somebody come back and also at the same time, you say like, yeah, I'm really grateful. I did that for me today. And it's sometimes like you have to have that gratitude of like, just remember you get to do this, right? It's so many people talk about, well, you know, you got to change it from a have to a get to kind of thing. And I totally get that. But there are also times, and we've talked many times, even in this episode, about it's not always fun, but it's like, you always have to kind of believe that further down the road, that this is about a bigger picture, right? And it's not that you'll be happy then, right? Because that's a really toxic way to be like, I'll only be happy when I get to that thing. But it's like, this was hard, but I'm proud of myself right now today for getting out at 9 o'clock at night and getting my miles in, because I told myself I was going to do it. And so I love what you said, because it's about kind of finding that happy groove, right? It's like when you get into this groove of like your run, like I tell you today, I went out and ran 5 miles this morning with the dog and I don't remember it at all, like at all. And I know that for some people that's like maybe a weird thing, but for me, it's just like, I just zoned out. Like I just like went off into my own space. I had some great thoughts about some other stuff I'm going to write and get done. But then I came back and I'm totally refreshed. Right? As chaotic as the next couple hours were going to be, like it was just such a refreshing thing. And so when we look at kind of your struggles with things and like injuries and things like that, where do you feel like you want to then take the next iteration of your training, right? You talked about you first got into, you know, running through Boston and then the DNF at TNF and how that really showed you community. Where for you now is that, do you feel like you want to return to a competitive state? Do you feel like, you know, maybe not that you've lost the competitive side, but is it always now just going to be adventure for you? Or do you feel like there's still some unfinished business? Do you know, sub 3 hours and things like that? Where do you find yourself?
I love competition. I love competition. And maybe I like it too much. My 5K PR is from 2014 when I ran like way, way beyond my means, and I still don't understand how I did it, but it was at a race that Shalane put on, and I was big into November Project at the time, and I had made it pretty clear that my goal was to break 18. And two of the co-leaders of November Project Boston at the time came up to me at the start line. They were like, "We're going to get you there. Like, don't look at your watch. Just trust us." And I had so much trust in these two guys, Dennis and Evan. And I don't understand how I ran that fast, because I've like matched the exact time in workouts since then, like three times, literally the same 17:42 in a 20-minute tempo. And I've not run within 10 seconds of that in a 5K race. I want to smash that. I want to break 17:30, break 17:15. I think I'm nowhere close to my potential in the marathon. I've run 2:59. I think I can get under 2:50 in the next 18 months. My coach thinks I can get under 2:40, like lifetime. So there's a lot of potential left on the roads. I want to run 100 miles one day, and I want to run 100 miles in one day, because I don't like night running. And I mean, honestly, I'd like to run in 18 hours, but that's not going to happen, so that I don't have to run through the night. But I want to do that to see if I can, right? I think anyone can run a marathon. I don't think anyone can race a marathon, but I don't even think that anyone can run 100 miles. And I don't know if I can. And I want to find out, and I want to know, where do I go mentally when things are harder than I've ever experienced, right? It's so infrequent that we get put in a place where things have literally never been this hard, right? I've experienced that moment tangibly twice. The first was in that 2:59 marathon when I was 20 miles in and I was like, this hurts a lot, but I still need to run under 7-minute miles for the next 10K to break 3. And I did. And the other time was infinitely more challenging when I was 35 miles into rim to rim to rim in just like the, like a world of pain with 5,000 feet of climbing to go. My stomach was like, nope, we're not doing any more gels today. And it was getting, sunset was in, I don't know, 3 hours, and we still had a 10K of distance to cover. And the climb out of the South Rim was the most uncomfortable thing I've ever experienced mentally and physically, because it was never ending. Every time you made a turn, you're like, wow, I thought I was close to getting out of this. But like, whoa, we've got a lot of climbing left to do. So it was like soul sucking in that it seemed like it was never going to end. But what it taught me in that moment, and I'm glad that I recorded this, because I was like, I want to remember this and I want to remember it vividly. I was talking to my phone to distract myself and recording videos. And 10 miles prior, I was like, wow, this is the best I've ever felt. I was running 7-minute miles at the 50K. And I was like, well, this is going to suck at some point. I'm going to pay for this, but whatever. It's fun now. Fast forward 10 miles. And I was like, there's literally nothing left to do besides one foot in front of the other. You have no other option. So you're stripped down to like the bare essentials. You could call a helicopter and get, you know, pulled out, or you can just endure. And I find the ability to endure like so fascinating. And again, where your mind goes. I started a podcast because I'm so fascinated by this exact topic. So very long-winded for the long answer to your question. yes, super competitive. Still really want to run fast. I do a lot of my long runs with a group here in Boulder, Boulder Underground. And it's a group, like most of the women are in the 240 range. And there's a lot of like, it's not a competition, but it's like a fun, who's running fast today? Who wants to progress? You know, that kind of stuff. And I thrive on that. And I also at the same time want to have these big epic days in on the mountains with friends where it's just like we're writing a story as it's happening.
I love that. I think in that sense, I think that's that moment you had when it's there's no other option but to keep going, right? Is life gets stripped down. Right. And when life gets narrowed down on the bad side, right, we're only focused on achieving a singular result. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, that result is about the farthest thing away that we're thinking of. When our mind is narrowed down to, I can either sit here and die or I can just keep going. I just need to eat and I need to drink. That's all I can do. I can move forward. I can eat and I can drink. Those are the three things that I can do right now. And that's all that's in my world. And we're going to go up that hill and we're going to get this thing done. And again, it's uncomfortable. And we haven't even really talked about the type two fun, that this is only one of those things that when you're doing it, it is hell and it's awful and it sucks and it's uncomfortable. But it makes the best story and it makes the best memories because you're uncomfortable, but you'll never, like, I was so uncomfortable in the Skyline Traverse after a certain point and I'll never forget it because it was just, it happened, right? It's kind of that life in a day, like Billy Yang talks about, is in that is like, it's all happening right in front of you. There's no forward, there's no reverse. It's right now. And you get to enjoy that and experience that. And I think that's what's beyond the marathon, right? Because it's not about the crowds. It's not about the people. It's not about the medal or the time. It's about experiencing what's happening right in front of you. You could be, you know, downtown Denver, you could be in the Grand Canyon, and that might be an experience, but that's what you've been chasing. That's what you've been training for, is to feel that in that moment. Yes. It's such a cool thing.
Yes. Yes. And the medals, the times, all that stuff, plenty of people have that as their goal. And I think totally. I think it's fine, but I don't think it's sustainable, right? Because you don't control it. And you don't, like, that was me for 4 years. And I considered those years a failure in the moment. And it was like a vicious cycle where I would run a marathon, it would suck, and I would feel bad about it. And I fell out of joy. And what righted that ship was switching to trails and
totally,
like, throwing out times where, like, I could run an 8 minute mile and I could run a 28 minute mile, and the 28 minute mile was harder. The best experience is when you run a 55 minute mile, and I put run in air quotes, and I did that last summer. I had three of them in a row. And that's some talk about doing it for the stories. Like, so I crewed a friend in a 100 mile race, and I ran 12 miles with her, and it took 7 hours. And I picked her up about 30 hours into the race, and we had basically 5,000 straight feet of climbing. And so I was like, this is stupid. This is really just dumb. But anyway, let's keep going. And so she's hallucinating and she's, you know, sitting on the side of the trail, and I'm trying to feed her. And I'm like, Kelly, what are you going to do? You going to live here? Do you live here now? Should I, like, forward your mail to this, like, fucking mountain? Sorry for swearing. I'm like, do you want me to, like, forward your mail and tell your boss that you're, like, out of cell coverage forever? Or, like, are we gonna keep going? And so she DNF'd that race, but it was a wild success, I think, because of how she was able to persist. She found her limit and then she kept going. And I had never seen anyone dig deeper and do more. Like, we all have our limits. And most of the time, we don't get anywhere close to it. There was a movie that I was watching. I think it was 14 Peaks or one of those adventure movies. And the line was, when you think you're fucked, you're only 45% fucked. Kelly was like 78% of the way there. Like, she was pretty, it was like,
yeah.
Indiana Jones made an appearance on the way up that mountain. But oh, yeah. the point is, she didn't finish the race, but she took what she learned in that race and then podiumed in 100-miler later that summer, like four weeks later. And what's so cool about that is, like, she still ran for 30 hours and like, quote unquote, failed.
Right.
But she didn't fail. She definitely learned. And there's such a difference between, like, I don't want to, like, bash road running versus trail running or whatnot. But what's interesting is with road running, you can always just step off.
Yep.
And be done. The only time I've ever DNF'd a trail race, I had to walk 4.5 miles on a sprained ankle, and it was incredibly painful. But, like, I wasn't like, and then I sat there for 2 hours, and then I got to the finish line. So it's like, I don't know where I was going with this, but I guess the point is, to get back to framing around your question, the point of racing is not, in my opinion, is not to... The point of racing is to see how well you can perform on the day. These numbers are totally arbitrary. Like, breaking 3, what if we were measuring it in, like, I don't know, like, who decided that 3 was the barrier? What if it was 257? What if it was 310? What if it was 4? What if it was, like, whatever? It's so arbitrary and it's so meaningless. It's this meaning that we add to it where we don't control these arbitrary goals. We do control how well are you going to perform on the day against your abilities. And that's what I've loved uncovering in the last couple of years.
Totally. You know, I try to tell people, like, your goal as a runner is to see how close you can get to your ability, right? Your true ability, right? Like, can you go, is that 30 hours that you explained to, you know, even though she DNF'd, like, she found her limit. She knows exactly where her limit is. And I think so often it's this black and white. If I don't finish, then it's been a failure.
A waste, yeah.
Right. It's a waste. And the reality is like, you found your limit. And sometimes that's the end of the journey. And that's right. It. That's okay. And that journey may come at mile 98 of a 100-mile race. And you're done.
Or Hayden Hawks's 92-mile DNF.
Right. You're done. You know, and you found your limit. And so no one's going to, you know, realistically, I mean, there's message boards that are made for, you know, judging people and things like that. But, like, especially in the running community, and they'll remain nameless. But, like, the reality is like, this is all a big experiment between you and the goal that you set for yourself, right? Like, we assign value to things just because they are what they are, right? Is a Mercedes actually worth what it's worth? Is that Prada bag worth actually what it's worth? Or have we assigned a value to that? So when it comes to that 3-hour barrier, you've assigned that as a barrier that probably for a long time you thought was completely unattainable. And that's almost what made it harder to get across, and even more worth relishing is that you assigned it a value. You gave it value and you gave it power and you gave it life, for better or for worse. In some ways, it's a great thing because it motivated you, but in other ways, it probably tore you down at times. And that's what this whole thing is about, right? And that's what I think I've learned in listening to your podcast is that everybody's on a journey of their own, and it's neither good nor bad. And it's neither right nor wrong. I can't understand what gets you out of bed in the morning, but that's what it comes back to when it comes to why. Is it's got to get you out of bed in the morning. It's got to motivate you. It's got to excite you. And when it doesn't, that's when you have to take a step back. And maybe that's when it's time to take a break and do all those things. But I think until then, I love the journey. I love where things are going. I do want to make sure that before we wrap things up today, that you do get a chance to talk a little bit about where people can find you, where people can, of course, listen to the podcast, but where can you be found both as John, but also as For the Long Run?
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity today. I just fact-checked myself and Hayden Hawks didn't DNF Western States. That, I don't know what I was thinking about there.
Is that
anyway,
Jim Walmsley? That was Jim Walmsley, wasn't it?
Jim Walmsley, yes. A decent mistake there. So I'm Able on... yeah. What a guy that guy is. Talk about finding limits. That man runs hard. Actually, he was the impetus behind his race with Zach Miller was like one of the reasons that I started my podcast, which is called For the Long Run, which can be found on all major podcast platforms. I'm on Instagram at JW Levitt, Twitter, same thing. And yeah, feel free to shoot me a message. And if you have a chance to tune into the podcast, I'd love to hear your takeaways.
Absolutely, John. I really appreciate you coming on today. I think we could have probably done a solid 2 hours today talking about all fun things. Maybe we'll have to do a three-way podcast and bring our buddy Foon in.
Oh, yeah. Or just fly him out to Boulder and go on a long run with him and somebody will have to wear a lapel.
Well, Mike. That would literally be For the Long Run. I love it.
Nice.
We'll make it come to life.
Perfect.
Hey guys, Coach Andrew Simmons here. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Defining Endurance, the podcast from Lifelong Endurance. Do you want more information and content between shows? Follow us on Instagram at lifelong_endurance, as well as on Facebook. You can also check out our YouTube page for more running and strength training tips. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.